This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Hey, it's 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. Jim Dunaway, Lance Taylor, Ryan Brown, and Rockstar. Laurel and Damian producing the show. Your phone calls throughout the morning. 834-945-0800-239-WJOX. Fun show ahead. First guest not until 7:30. Todd Furman with us. Stan White, Tom Luganville later on. Brown put together a game. We got Miranda Lambert tickets to give away. We start off, though, with news from Auburn in a week where they don't have a game, but this is one that could impact games down the stretch. Jartavius Booby-Whitlow out 4 to 6 weeks with a knee injury. Actually heard it late in the Florida game, went back in the game. They didn't know until the next day how bad the injury was. Got it checked out. He has surgery, and now he's out 4 to 6 weeks. It gets him back likely, if everything goes well, for the Georgia-Alabama game. But some big games between now and then. And coming off the first loss, that doesn't disrupt the season that much. This is an injury that could disrupt that offense a lot.
This one surprised me. I mean, did this come out of nowhere for you guys?
Yeah, absolutely, because you didn't see him limp off, right?
No, not at all. Yeah. And, you know, this is a huge injury because you talk about an offense that looked so good in spots against Mississippi State and then had by far their worst game against Florida. And now we're talking about not only your leading rusher, but your second leading rusher is your quarterback in Bo Nix. And where do you turn? I mean, is Cam Martin a guy that actually can be an every down back?
I was thinking about this morning. To me, and there will probably be those that disagree, but I want you to understand what I'm saying. To me, this is the single biggest injury Auburn could have as I thought about it more.
With Gatewood and Nix together? You know what I'm saying?
No, I think
it's quarterback.
Yeah, usually it's quarterback, but yeah. I think if Nix went out, you know, Gatewood is capable of running a Gus Malzahn-style offense. I don't think you would miss that big of a beat.
No, I would agree based on what we saw with Nix's struggles last week. I mean, the only other guy, I mean, Derrick Brown is such a game changer. Derrick Brown is such a disruptive force, but when we're talking about the offense goes how your best running back goes when it comes to Gus Malzahn offenses.
Look, Derrick Brown is probably the best single player on the team. Yeah. I don't think anybody would argue that. But if he goes out, you got dudes all across that defensive front. Now, that's a big loss. There's no doubt. But you've still got Davidson. You've still got Truesdale, who's played well. You got guys all across that front. You're fine.
Yeah, your point is the defensive line at that point doesn't become, you know,
a liability.
A liability. It is still very capable of doing what it needs to do, maybe not at the same level.
And anybody that has watched Auburn under Gus Malzahn over any period of time knows that there may not be an offense in the country, there are not many, that needs to run the ball well early for their offense to work. If Auburn can't run early, and you saw this against Florida, as soon as they couldn't run the ball, their offense is a mess. And there are some teams that can overcome the inability to run. It's hard to do. But Auburn's is based on that. So they got to have a really good rush attack. And I just don't think they have that. At least we haven't seen it. I mean, Harold Joyner's had, I think, 4 carries.
They keep talking about DJ Williams.
He's played in 2 games.
DJ Williams.
He's supposed to be good, but we haven't seen anything out of
him. Now he's going to get an opportunity. And look, let me back this up by saying the next 4 weeks, I think the only loss will be at LSU, at least right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think
these games get a little trickier. When you go to Arkansas, if Arkansas plays like they played against Texas A&M, you guys watch that game, and I know it's different because that's a big rivalry, and that game always seems to go to the wire. But, you know, this is an Arkansas team that is starving for an SEC win, and, you know, when you lose maybe the most vital cog in that offense, things become trickier on the road in the SEC.
Yeah, I agree with that. Cam Martin obviously will get the first look, and then you find other guys to take some carries. It's when, I mean, if you watch in the second half, I mean, Booby-Whitlow started to heat up. That's when I thought Auburn was still going to win that football game because, you know, holes that were not there in the first half were there in the second half, and I thought to myself for a brief moment, okay, this is sort of playing out the way Auburn had hoped it would play out. They survived that first half, and they've leaned on that Florida team a little bit, and now there's some running room for Whitlow that's going to open things up, and it just never did.
Yeah.
So he's that important to what they do. And I guess we'll find out just how good everyone else is and if the system creates a running back or the running back helps the system.
Yeah, I just think you've got to have – I don't know that Cam Martin – I've said this a lot going into this year, that Bobby Whitlow is the only SEC three-down back that we've seen from that team. Now, a lot of people thought DJ Williams could be that. There were even some that thought Harold Joyner could be that. We haven't seen enough of those guys to know. I mean, as I mentioned, DJ Williams played in two games. Harold Joyner's, I think, had four carries, so we don't know. I don't think Cam Martin's that guy. I don't know if you guys disagree with me, but Cam Martin does not look like a guy who can play all three downs.
You know, and this is just, I mean, this is a bad week for Auburn football, obviously. You're coming off bad loss to Florida. Your true freshman quarterback plays the worst game of his early career. And then, again, Brown, as you make the point, I mean, this might be your most valuable offensive weapon. He's going to be out at least the next month.
You know what's weird? Is this has happened at both schools this year, because I think when Dylan Moses got hurt, I think that was the single biggest injury Alabama could have at that point, because you'd already lost Josh McMillan next to him. You're already going to have a freshman. Alabama hasn't cost them a game yet. I don't think you could argue that their defense would be different with Dylan Moses in there. It'd be better. So I think when Dylan Moses went down, that was the – if you said, all right, give me one player on this team you can't lose, it'd probably be Tua Tagovailoa, most would say, obviously.
Yeah. There still seems to be a big gap there.
Yeah, but Dylan Moses, I think, was in that conversation.
I agree with
you. So it's weird that it's happened at both schools already.
I think ultimately if Alabama doesn't win a national championship, I think you'll look back and you'll say this could be one of the biggest losses as far as injuries in, you know, the era of Nick Saban.
So that's where Auburn starts the day. We'll get your reaction to that injury and Auburn moving forward. It is big game week for Alabama and other big games around the country, including – LSU playing host to Florida, where LSU finds out after Monday's workout with Terrence Marshall back, he wasn't at practice Tuesday. They always talk about the day after when you come back from injuries, the soreness and everything like that. So he was not back there Tuesday, as they went with full pads on Tuesday. So he is at least back to questionable for the game this weekend, their third wide receiver. We've got football tonight, and it's a good one. In the Sun Belt Conference, two really good teams, Appalachian State and Louisiana, playing each other tonight with conference championship implications on the line. So if you were thinking you were just going to settle in for great baseball tonight, well, think again. You can have a TV on the Sun Belt action. What do we call it? Fun Belt.
The Fun Belt, baby.
Yeah, Maction and Fun Belt during the middle of the week. You're talking about two teams who are in the opposite of division, so you could end up seeing a precursor to the Sun Belt Championship game, where 4-0 Appalachian State and 4-1 Louisiana. You believe this is a fun game tonight, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good matchup, you know, and Appy State really hasn't lost a beat since Scott Satterfield's doing such a good job right now with Louisville, at least reestablishing that culture. But this is a really good Appalachian State team that went on the road and already beat North Carolina. They're sitting at 4-0. But, oh, by the way, this game is a pick right now with Louisiana Lafayette.
Straight-up pick, and Louisiana's only lost the opener at home. They got Mississippi State to actually play them in New Orleans. But in that game, you know, Louisiana made a rally at the end to try to make that interesting. So
that might have been Mississippi State's best win, by the way.
Wow, really?
Well, I'm just talking about the way they played.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. You're right. All right, so that's all the football that's on the table as we roll in to this Wednesday. Baseball all over the place. Last night, my favorite team, the Tampa Bay Rays, did something I didn't think they could do. They beat Justin Verlander, who was going on short rest. And I guess the big question in this one is, was that a huge mistake by the Astros to go short rest on Verlander, or was it worth the gamble knowing you still had Cole in the back pocket?
Okay, full disclosure, I think we talked about this in one of the breaks yesterday. I thought it was a mistake because you're talking about probably the best team in Major League Baseball. You know, you're already dominating this series. Let Verlander have his full rest. Go back to Houston. Let him pitch game five. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, Gerrit Cole hasn't lost since May 22nd.
Right. He only 27 outs in a game. He didn't do a complete game, but of the outs he got in the game, I think he went, 7 1/3 or something?
Yeah.
He had 15 strikeouts.
Yeah. So he's
– That's not bad on ball.
Did you just say he hasn't lost since May?
May 22nd.
That is insane.
The last time the Astros have lost a Gerrit Cole start.
He's due, Dunaway.
That's how good he is. But, you know, I thought it was weird to put Verlander in this situation. I mean, Verlander, again, he's kind of the Tom Brady of Major League Baseball. He doesn't age at 36. But on short rest, I mean, something he's never done in the postseason, and A.J. Hinch, I think, kind of regrets this. You know, outside of that first, which obviously was really rocky, where you guys get a three spot, but you kind of saw it with Tommy Pham in that second at bat. that it wasn't going to be Verlander's night. So congratulations to your Rays just extending this series. I think everybody in Major League Baseball that's not an Astros fan likes to see at least a little drama come down.
Hey, and how about 32,000?
Oh, yeah.
A real crowd.
Real Rays fans. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, they have some crowds that approach 28 and 30,000 that are 20,000 Yankee fans and 12,000 Rays fans. It looked like there were 30,000 real Tampa Bay fans.
No, I swear to God, though, it looks like there's some Weekend at Bernie guys there in there. Like,
oh, no, you've got like
dead people.
The ugliest fan base in,
well,
in all
I'm
of
not even saying ugly. I'm just saying like really people is. That are like, it's almost like The Walking Dead, like people that aren't of sound mind or like waving towels.
Watch tonight, though. Watch tonight. And I'm not trying to take a shot at your team, but those seats right behind home plate in a Dodgers game, my wife said...
Well, it's a bunch of Larry Kings.
It is. My wife said, that looks like a retirement home outing behind home plate. I started looking at it.
You always call that old money.
No, it is. It's multi-millionaires that have car services.
Oh,
their
yeah.
Drivers drive them up there. They get walked to their seats.
They never stand up either.
No.
Yeah. Well, the lady who used to host Entertainment Tonight or something.
Mary Lee Hart?
Yeah, she
is that her name?
She gets up and dances a little bit occasionally.
Probably too much.
Probably a little too much. But you're right about, you know, our stadium's in St. Pete, a retirement destination. And, you know, that's right in the baseball wheelhouse. So a lot of them make their way over to the Tropicana Field.
But, you know, baseball's a weird sport. So I know Braves fans are freaking out because, you know, when typically a Braves, they get in this situation, they don't win these games.
Yeah, you know who really doesn't? It's the Nationals.
Well, and Folty pitched so well the last time out, and Flaherty's just been so good down the stretch. It's just hard to believe the Braves are going to be able to win this game even at home. But in one-game situations, the Dodgers with Buehler on the hill going against Strasburg, I mean, that is something you don't want if you're a Dodger fan.
Yeah.
You know, for your Rays going against the Astros, as good as Cole is, baseball's a weird sport.
Yeah, hey, you saw it last night. I mean, the Astros – would have a runner on first base and one out and just lace one right down the first baseline. And Choi would just throw his glove out, grab it, and step on first base. That happened twice in the game. They threw a guy out at the plate.
And that kid's pretty good, by the way.
Choi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably maybe the best South Korean right now playing outside of Ryu.
That's a stretch, but okay.
Very narrow.
I think there's 16 South Koreans in Major League Baseball. Well, I think I heard that the other day.
Wow, that is a weird number that you've got.
At least he didn't go, you know, anywhere in the 20 parallels of South Korea. He's probably the best guy ever born there. Do you think Braves fans are worried today about this Cardinals team coming to town? It's a deciding game 5 over in Atlanta. The weather should be good. Afternoon baseball, it goes at 4 o'clock. You'll hear it on Jocks, too. Well, 100.5 FM, but I still feel like offensively this Braves team is the better team, right?
Well, they are, especially with Flaherty on the mound. You know, Pat Smith pointed this out to me, who is our resident Cardinals fan, that Flaherty going into that last game he pitched had 19 quality starts, which I can't remember the exact definition of a quality start. I think you go 6 or more and give up less than 3 runs or something like that. Some, you know, one of those baseball stats.
Yeah. 5 or more, maybe.
Yeah, whatever it is. That's irrelevant. But he had 19 quality starts, and the Cardinals' record in those games was 9-10. And he gave them another quality start, and it was now 9-11. They don't give them runs, Lance. And, you know, I guess you can't base everything on that, but that's the thing that has hurt Flaherty. Is he just doesn't get a lot of run support of late.
Yeah, but the bottom line is Flaherty has only allowed 3 earned runs. Well, I guess in the postseason, 3 earned runs, but a sub-1 ERA since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
I mean, that leads Major League Baseball.
No, he's been terrific.
So if you get that quality start coupled with the fact that the Braves really difficult to close anyone out. I mean, when's the last time they won a winner-take-all? I think it was the 1996 NLCS.
It can't be that long ago.
I think it really was.
Serious?
I do think it was the year they won the World Series, which was that year.
Well, they won the World Series in 95. Okay. But I really think the last time they won a winner take all was 96.
The last time they went to a World Series? Last time they went to one?
Yeah. I think so.
Jeez, Lance, that can't be right.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, that's crazy. Well, you know, you look at a guy home and away. You know, I mean, you look for anything in this game. And really, all season long, Flaherty, his ERA isn't that huge of a difference home and away. I mean, he's pitched pretty well on the road.
Look, Flaherty's going to pitch well.
Yeah.
But my question is, Foltynewicz, can he pitch as well as he did in game 2? if you get that kind of start out of Foltynewicz, if Folty is that good, Acuna has been crushing it right now.
If I took you back, when was it Foltynewicz went down? Like in July when he went, they had to send him to the minors. What if I had taken Braves fans in July and said, all right, here's the good news, bad news. Good news is you're in the playoffs and you're in a winner-take-all game against the Cardinals to go to the NLCS. Bad news, you're starting Foltynewicz. The Braves fans would have probably said, oh, my God.
Yeah. If you'd have taken him to Gwinnett and said, hey.
Yeah, here's your guy.
That guy's going to start a deciding game five for you.
You would have probably said, no, thank you.
Yeah. But arguably going against at least the best second-half pitcher in Major League Baseball this year.
But right now, you look at it, and if you're a Braves fan, is this not the guy you would pick to have on the hill? Some would probably say Soroka. I'm fine with that.
I think if you had a well-rested Keuchel just based on his experience.
Yeah. Of course, he lost game one, right?
Yeah. Look, he hasn't pitched great, but I'm just talking about experience.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah.
So I'm hearing that a lot of you don't believe Folty can do what he did last time, two times in a row. Well, something we'll watch today as the Braves go a little bit later on this afternoon at 4, then Nationals and Dodgers. Back to the football question on Auburn. Bobby writes in, Booby Whitlow is not an SEC talent at running back. Getting gassed in the first game of the year on only 24 carries, all the fumbles this year. This injury will force Gus to play DJ Williams instead of running one guy into the ground like he's done in the past. This could be a blessing in disguise. Scott's in Millbrook. Scott, what do you think of Auburn now with Booby Whitlow's injury?
It's going to be pretty bad. I was wanting to see, do I have any takers on a stake bet that Auburn will go 7-5?
Well, we don't do stake bets with listeners because it's hard to pay those off.
Seven and five.
I think it's kind of a given right now. Is it 8-4, right? That's what most people would believe. Yeah. And, if they drop one, they're not supposed to drop.
7-5, Scott. Scott, are you an Auburn fan?
Oh, yeah.
Well, 7-5 means you're going to lose to Ole Miss or Arkansas.
Yeah. And I think more than likely Ole Miss will give us problems. But Arkansas, LT was saying a little while ago that they're starving for an SEC win and they may jump up and get us. But the thing is, I called and talked to Cole the other day and he blew me off. I'm trying to figure out, don't you think that we're going to eventually let Gus go if we do go 7-5? And he didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah,
blew me off, and he just like,
I don't want to talk about it.
Can't speculate that right now.
Well, I'll talk about it. I think if Auburn goes 7-5, Gus Malzahn is out of a job.
Well, here's the problem with 7-5 wouldn't necessarily have fired Gus Malzahn, but 7-5 now means the end of this season is a complete disaster.
Yeah, complete disaster.
Yeah. But who do we hire, though?
That's always the question. Yeah.
I would say, Scott, you also, though, had a lot of – you rose all the way to number 7 in the country.
Yeah.
So did you bank any goodwill that sort of evens you back out as you implode back to 7-5?
Let me also say this, Dunaway. It depends on how the 7-5 unfolds. That would be an implosion just based on wins and losses. But if you get run off the field against Georgia and Alabama and go 7-5, that's a big problem.
If you're going to paint scenarios, the worst one for him would probably be lose to Ole Miss, not Arkansas, and here's why. Because if you lose to Ole Miss, you will have finished the season losing to LSU, Ole Miss, Georgia, beat Samford, lose to Alabama. You're going to lose 4 of your last 5. And potentially, I guess your 3 biggest rivals there, LSU, Georgia, and Alabama included in that group. So that's a bad way to finish.
That would be a bad ending.
Yeah. Yeah, I still don't see that. Yeah, I do think this is an 8-4 team based on what I saw in Gainesville this past weekend.
Yeah, I will tell you though, if I let's do this when we come back.
So better chance of Auburn going 9-3 or 7-5? If I asked you that, getting one of these wins or losing one, they should.
I'd say better chance 7-5.
I'm not ready to give up on 9-3 yet with this team.
I think I would go 7-5.
Yeah. Now Booby Whitlow changes it a little bit for me and. With whatever, however Bobby feels or whomever, I felt like he was a back that helped this football team and gave them a chance to win games, and I haven't seen these others yet. We'll see. Maybe DJ Williams is, as Bobby said, a blessing in disguise. After the first impression of a team, who do you think's improved the most? And I'm going to throw one out first, and you give me a reaction. This Ole Miss team, and I know they got beat pretty bad in Tuscaloosa. But with the quarterback, John Rhys Plumlee, now, and his speed.
I was debating this, Dave. I thought you guys would laugh at me.
No. I think he flips the script. Jerrion Ealy, the freshman, also complimenting Scotty Phillips. This team runs the football pretty good right now. I'm not saying they're going to do a lot. I just think they're tough. They're a tougher out now than they were earlier in the season. I think they're an improving football team. Matt Luke may save his job before it's all said and done.
I mean, I don't disagree, Brown. You go back to the Memphis game. I mean, Memphis was lucky to survive that game 15-10. You go back to the Cal game. That came down to a controversial ending where they lose by a possession. They walked Vanderbilt off the field. And Plumlee, that guy can absolutely fly. I don't think it's a if you're going against an elite defense, I don't think it would be a difficult offense to necessarily shut down, although Alabama had trouble with them in a couple of quarters. I mean, giving up 31 points, but I agree with you. I mean, and this is typically what we've seen from Ole Miss over the last couple of years. They play hard for Matt Luke.
There are seven teams. I identified half the conference that I think is playing better now than they were week one. Ole Miss was one I put a question mark next to, but I do think there are two teams that have injured themselves into playing better, and I think Ole Miss is one of those teams. I think
they're better without Matt Corral.
I think so.
Yeah, it looks to me.
I mean, we got a really small sample size of Plumlee.
Yeah, I know your other one, and that's really the only team that jumps out to me. I do think Ole Miss played a little bit better.
Well, I think there are seven, but I think the other one is the biggest jump to me.
But, guys, if you look at Ole Miss, and we take our fair shots at Ole Miss, you know, on the show, but their loss to Memphis, holding them to 15, that Memphis team scores some points, and, you know, Memphis is, you know, right there ranked 23rd in the country right now.
Their defense has played better. I mean, like you said, 15 to Memphis, 17 to Arkansas, 28 to Cal. It wasn't defense that lost that game against Cal.
And, oh, by the way, that Cal loss, I mean, their losses, Memphis, Cal, and Alabama, those are pretty good football teams.
Yeah, but no, here's the thing,
59
though,
to Alabama, but that wasn't 60. Alabama scored 60-plus in two straight games. So I guess they improved a little bit there, too.
Outside of New Mexico State, there's not a given win on the schedule.
There's not a given, not at all.
I mean, they could beat Texas A&M if everything broke the right way. They obviously can beat Mississippi State.
What about Missouri this weekend?
No, I don't see that.
Well, give me the health of Kelly Bryant.
Yeah, I mean, if Kelly Bryant's playing.
Well, he says he's 90% and he's getting used to wearing the brace on his left knee. So he's going to play the game with a brace on his left knee. And he says he's 90% yesterday.
If he's 90%, then I feel good about Missouri. If it's a legitimate 90% Kelly Bryant, that's a good enough Missouri team. The loss they had defensively, I mean, that's a loss. He's not coming back. That's a big loss.
I feel kind of comfortable saying this team's going to be 4-8.
So they've got one more win in them.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think they beat New Mexico State, and I think they lose out. And I don't know if that's enough to keep his job. You know, I think if they go 5-7, I think it's kind of difficult to fire Matt Luke. And it goes back to the question our caller had earlier about if you fired Gus Malzahn, who does Auburn get? Bigger question, who does Ole Miss get?
At Missouri this weekend, Missouri better than Memphis?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's enough. Finish the question.
I thought you were going to say, is Missouri one of the teams you would say has improved since week one? And I would definitely say yes.
Brady
and I do
White's
think they're better than Memphis.
Not a good quarterback. And Memphis is missing, you know, Tony Pollard from last year, Daryl Henderson. I mean, they're missing major weapons. Memphis is not nearly the team they were last year.
All right. Missouri just on the outside of the top 25. Right now, 27 in the AP voting. Who are the other teams, Brown, you have that have improved since your first impression of them?
Well, I'll stay in the East. I've got Missouri. Would you guys give me that? I mean, their first impression was losing to Wyoming.
Well, yeah, I mean, based on that, I mean, they've won four consecutive games.
But I think they've gotten better each week.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That we talked about it on Monday. The loss of Kel Garrett, though, their linebacker.
Yeah, it's tough.
He's their number one defender.
Yeah.
And he made the plays at the linebacker position. That's going to be a big loss.
I think Florida has injured themselves into being a better team. I think they're better with Trask.
No doubt Florida is a better team. I mean, from what we saw against Miami, especially in that second half with Felipe Franks, Florida's a much better team. Now, you know, if Florida somehow wins this weekend in Baton Rouge, then, I mean, we all have to acknowledge that, you know, Dan Mullen's done a heck of a job. This Florida team's legitimate. I don't think they do that, but if they do, watch out.
Well, Trask is more accurate than Felipe Franks, so I think you've improved at the quarterback position, and that's always huge. I don't know if you can find a team on your list, Brown, better than Florida that's improved.
Oh, no, it's the biggest jump in the SEC. I think Georgia's improved, maybe just marginally. But I think they've improved.
Be good,
yeah, you know, Brent, we brought this up with Mississippi State, how they play better with Schrader. It seems like people rally around Schrader. I think that's Kyle Trask at Florida. For whatever reason, it seems like a more comfortable situation. I don't think it's a dynamic offense by any means, but the defense is so dominant. And if Trask doesn't make the mistakes, I think they've got enough playmakers where they can win a lot of games.
In the West, I think LSU has improved over week one.
I can't tell. They haven't played anybody.
I think Alabama has improved over week one.
I mean, they did beat Texas. You don't mean they haven't played anybody, right? Texas is a great win for LSU.
But I mean, since then, that was a long time ago.
I think Alabama has improved. Again, it might just be marginally, but I think they've gotten better.
I don't know. I mean, you go back to the Duke game. Duke's a pretty good team. They completely dominated Duke.
And I think Arkansas has improved from week one.
Yeah, Arkansas has improved. Yep. I would give you that.
So those are the seven. I've got Florida, Georgia, Missouri, Alabama, LSU, Arkansas, and Ole Miss. I think those are the teams that have improved from week one. And 1 week ago, I would have said Auburn.
Right.
But after that last performance, I just don't know that I can say that anymore.
DK says Florida since week one, 100% on that one.
That's the only team I feel really comfortable saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brownie, how are we playing?
Well, here's what we're doing. We're taking song titles from Miranda Lambert, and we'll ask a trivia question based on that song title. It's basically a true or false game. Very easy, 50-50.
So either true or false. That's your answer. And we'll start with Michael in Gadsden. Michael, how you doing, bud?
I'm fine. How are y'all?
Doing great. Thank you, Michael. Miranda Lambert did a song called It All Comes Out in the Wash.
Sure it does.
Maytag is one of the leading brands in washing machines.
They are.
They were designed by F.L. Maytag. He's considered the father of the electric washing machine. And what he did was he created the agitator that goes in the middle of the drum.
We're getting really technical on the washer now.
Okay, well, I just had to set up the question, Lance.
Here comes the question.
The way he invented the agitator, it was originally used as a torture for prisoners of war in World War I by Maytag himself. Is that true or false?
Michael?
False.
He's going to say false. I'm going to say Brown loves his war trivia. I'm going to say it was used to shake up paint.
I'm going to say it was true, bro.
It is false. It was not used for World War I at all, Michael. Hang tight your head. That'd be awful. You know, we used to torture prisoners for this, but I think it can wash clothes like nobody's business.
Get your whites whiter.
And people that are old enough remember in those early washing machines, they had a thing at the top that you put your clothes through that sort of wrung them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They also used those in torture chambers back in the 1400s.
All right.
Caleb is
that
in
is
Carrollton.
True. That's a good point.
Caleb, how are you doing?
Hey, good. How y'all doing?
Great, thank you. Miranda Lambert has a song named Tin Man.
Yes, she does.
In the movie Wizard of Oz, Jack Haley played the part of the Tin Man only after Buddy Ebsen had a near-fatal allergic reaction to the Tin Man costume. Is that true or false?
I'll say true.
You'll say true.
I'm going to say true, too. I think it was actually the paint they put on his face. But yes, I'm going
to
say
the
true.
The paint would make more sense. I don't know anybody that has an allergic reaction to tin.
Well, it is true. The allergic reaction was to aluminum, which is what the Tin Man costume was made out of. He actually breathed some of it in. He almost died, buddy.
So he can't pound beer then,
right? I don't know. It might be tricky for him. Hang on, Caleb. You're on the drawing.
Yeah, so hold on, Caleb.
We might have never had Beverly Hillbillies had Buddy Ebsen taken that part. Could you imagine anybody else playing?
A life without the Beverly Hillbillies.
What would it be like on this world, lads?
What role did he play?
Buddy Ebsen, he was the father in Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
You were going to say Granny.
He was also in some, he was a detective, right? In some TV show. Barney Miller.
No. Barnaby Jones. Barnabas
something. Yeah, Barnaby Jones.
Barnaby Jones.
That's right.
Oh, very good.
Chris is in Coleman. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good, I don't know how I knew that.
That's a weird one, yeah. Great, thank you. Kerosene is a Miranda Lambert song.
Yeah.
You like that one, Jim?
I do.
Yeah, you've grown at all these. Are you a big Miranda Lambert guy?
I do. I love her. And that's early Miranda Lambert.
Rockstar might know this one because he's into presidential trivia. President Abraham Lincoln developed a habit of adding drops of kerosene to a nightly glass of milk after doctors suggested it would help his severe acid reflux. Is that true or false?
What the?
I say false on that one.
He's going to say false on that one.
I'm going to say true because it is so far-fetched.
I mean, we
got to be bad for the stomach.
We used to do bad things medically back in the day, but I went to school to learn to put a drop of kerosene in my milk. No way.
Rockstar, you're a presidential trivia buff.
I've never heard this one, but I'll say it's true.
That's why you're so skinny.
It's 100% false. Can you imagine somebody adding kerosene to
people
milk?
People put leeches on their body to suck out bad blood.
Hang on, Chris. You're in the drawing. Kerosene's awful. It smells terrible. I cannot imagine putting it in milk.
I mean, Abe would never get any 11. Can you imagine that breath?
Oh, God,
breath,
after that.
Not breath, breath.
Did you see Mary Todd? He probably did it on purpose.
what is your dollar amount to do a drop of kerosene in a glass of milk from now on for the rest of your life?
Oh, it's got got two commas. That dollar amount has two commas.
You think it kills you?
It can't be good for you.
Yeah, I think it would over a period of time.
Scott's in Birmingham. He's next with us. Hey, Scott, we're playing for Miranda Lambert tickets. You can buy yours this weekend if you don't win. Ticketmaster.com starting Friday.
All right, Scott. Coal Miner's Daughter is a cover that was sung by Miranda Lambert.
Originally Tammy Wynette.
Tammy Wynette.
No, Loretta Lynn.
In the 1980 film, Sissy Spacek portrays Loretta Lynn. She was initially torn between that role and a different role. So she insisted on doing all her own singing in hopes it would scare away the directors. Instead, it's why they chose her. True or false?
I'd say true.
He's going to say that's true.
That's very Sissy Spacek. Yeah, I would say true, too.
I'm going to say true, too.
Yeah, it is 100% true. Very good. Hang tight there, Scott. You're in
what
the
was drawing. The other role Nobody's she wanted, you know?
You know, oddly enough, it was a movie called Bad Timing that starred Art Garfunkel. So I'm going to say she got the better role here.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I've never heard of Bad Timing, and I don't think Art Garfunkel was a great actor.
Did Paul Simon see all those lines?
Miranda Lambert's in concert Saturday, January 18th, Legacy Arena. A few more here. Ticketmaster.com. Tickets go on sale on Friday. Let's go to Jason. He's next with us. Hey, Jason, how are you?
Fine. How are you guys?
Great, man. Thank you. Another Miranda Lambert song is Gunpowder and Lead. Gunpowder was accidentally created by 9th century Chinese chemist attempting to create an elixir of life, a medicine that granted eternal life.
You want to say that's true?
He's going to say that's true.
They did invent the fireworks, so I'm going to say that's how they came up with it. I'm going to say true as well.
I'll go true. Yeah.
It is 100% true. Yeah. Wow, our listeners haven't missed one yet.
Way to go, Jason.
We're losing our fastball here.
All right. Two more.
All right, two more.
Mike in Birmingham. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Oh, we're doing great. Blessed as always, guys. Hope you are as well.
Oh, never better.
Better than we deserve.
That's right. Locomotive is a Miranda Lambert song. As an infant, Yankees slugger Babe Ruth was actually aboard the first locomotive that crossed the Rocky Mountains from east to west. Is that true or false?
I'm going to go with false.
He's going to go with false, so he had to think about it.
I agree. I think it's false.
Why do you think it's false?
I'm going to say it's false, too. I don't think the trains were able to carry Babe Ruth back then.
He was an infant, Jim.
Even as a young child.
Very small.
He was a big babe.
Don't you remember on The Natural where the bopper, I mean, it's Babe Ruth, basically was on a train. It is 100% false, so hang tight there, Jason. Or who am I
Mike,
talking to? Mike, you're
Mike.
Still in the drawing, whoever.
So Mike's in the drawing. Hold on. And Steve in Birmingham will be our final one here. Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Okay, guys.
Vice is also a Miranda Lambert song. Her parents were Vice cops. They became private detectives, and they were actually part of an investigative team during the impeachment of President Bill Clinton. True or false?
I'm going to go false.
He's going to say that's false.
Yeah, I'm going to say false.
I'm going to say false as well.
You guys discounted it so quickly. It's 100% true. Sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the only miss.
Two things for Lance to watch tonight if you're not watching anything. 6 p.m. on FX, you got Logan.
Lance?
Oh, wow.
It is.
A few early runs by the Nationals. Will you be over on Logan?
By far, all of these Dark Knight freaks out there, which was a good film, Logan crushes it.
I've never seen it.
Best comic book movie ever.
And then 7 p.m. on Showtime, you got an old Morgan Freeman on Unforgiven.
Oh, best Western ever.
There you go. And then 9 p.m. on HBO, 24/7 college football, the feature, Penn State Nittany Lions.
Boring.
You think James Franklin will wear you out?
Oh, yeah. Well, how about
who likes himself more, James Franklin or Dan Mullen? That could be a good poll question.
Weren't they the past two episodes, too? That's great.
Yeah.
I will throw that one out there.
Those might be the two most arrogant coaches in college football. Is that fair? I mean, do you guys know?
I could see both of them talking to themselves in the mirror.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to the entire Tom Herman news conference today. Mm-hmm. I like him.
I don't.
Listening to him explain football to me.
No, that's why I thought, you know, just watching him back from his Iowa State offensive coordinator days. I mean, he's a very polished guy, but now that he's got this job, he is a little obnoxious.
Yeah.
It is 7:51. Rockstar, if you'll give me cut 8, if I ask you the drunkest rivalry in college football, what comes to mind instantly?
Georgia and Florida.
They literally called it the cocktail party.
And if you've ever been, there is a reason.
Yeah.
People can't walk.
Georgia, Florida.
And they They play that at 2:30.
So yeah,
I mean, 11 o'clock.
The way they act sometimes, I throw the egg bowl in there, right?
Yeah.
Over like, the holidays, Thanksgiving.
I'll tell you though, 11 o'clock can backfire from this perspective. You know, we talk about 7 o'clock, those night games where people drink all day. 11 o'clock, your problem is people go out all night the night before, and when you get up the next morning and you have that first cocktail, it puts you over the edge.
This has never been officially announced, I don't think, but it's basically mandated by the SEC, I believe, that that cocktail party be played at 2:30 because the night games, it got so out of whack. The drinking got so out of whack. Basically, this game is mandated on CBS.
Dan Wetzel, in his podcast, go check it out, he talks about several things, but one of them is the Red River Shootout at the Texas State Fair as one of the, if not the drunkest rivalries in college football.
Having Texas and Oklahoma locked in the top 10, both really good, both playing wide open football, but like it's going to be a heck of a game too.
It is a wild party, and they play this thing, and then you can go back out into the state fair and go, I don't know. The party is basically, it's not a tailgate. It's not a cocktail party. It is a full weekend of mayhem. And the losers scurry out of the Cotton Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
They run.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having Texas and Oklahoma locked in the top.
Okay, so that's Dan Wetzel in his podcast there, where he says the state fair, it's not a tailgate. You just go back out and keep doing fair things.
How bad is it, though, the dad that brings the little kid? And your team's down like 2 touchdowns, and all you hear is, Dad, can we just go to the fair now? Can we just go to the fair?
Oh.
Can we just go to the fair now? Because I was thinking when Lance said earlier he'd like it to be a nighttime kickoff. You say that, Lance, but imagine being the Texas fan with your kids in the fair and having to pry them away from the rides to go sit in the stadium an hour before kick.
Yeah, but you would take them to the fair early, wear them out, and then send them home to the babysitter.
Oh. Okay.
Can you imagine, though, after losing and having to take that kid and ride the scrambler and all the other rides, and you got a cocktail in you.
It's
got
to be terrible.
And a stadium dog. And then you've eaten a fried Oreo.
And those Oklahoma fans are running around doing the horns down.
I really wonder the percentage of people that don't make it out Saturday night. Because, again, look, a lot of us have been there before where you have a long night, you get up, and you have that first cocktail in the morning way too early at like 8:30, 9 o'clock before a big game.
The coaches and the players go. They let the players go to the fair, don't they? Because we've seen...
I don't know if they still do.
I've recently, fairly recently, seen pictures of the coaches sitting on a picnic table eating a corn dog at the fair. I mean, I think used to the coaches and players, win or lose, would come out and go to the fair.
Could you eat a corn dog
right now,
8 o'clock a.m.?
Yes, it is pre 8 o'clock a.m. If there were a corn dog in front of me, I'd eat the heck out of it.
Breakfast corn dog is what I call that. Yeah, absolutely.
Mustard and ketchup mixed together.
Yeah.
That's the way you do it.
I'd roll a fried egg around it and call it breakfast.
I'd say, actually, a corn dog dipped in mayonnaise is really good.
Yeah, see, I've never done the mayonnaise. The mixed ketchup and mustard is 100%.
You love mayonnaise a little bit more than I do.
I think I love mayonnaise more than anyone except Wimp Sanderson.
I could live without it, really. I think if you took mayonnaise off the planet, I'd be fine.
Hey, by the way, I saw Wimp in Publix the other day, Wimp and Annette, and the first thing he said to me, hey, blue plate hit.
Yeah, well, good luck this week. Guess what? Ohio State's not playing.
Two straight. He thinks he'll go 3-0. He'll be with us Thursday. Back to the phones we go. Mike the Tiger is next with us. What's up, Mike the Tiger?
Hey, guys. Big game this week. Before my comment, I wanted to say I met one of your friends. Sammy the bartender, and I figured out Dunaway's secret to a happy life. Two words, spicy margarita.
Yes, down at Soho Social, Sammy the bartender hooks us up during our podcast every week.
Right.
Pours
Great
and
stuff.
Scores, which you can get at jocksfm.com. And she's really good at picking games. She was 8-1 at one point
against
this year.
Against the spread?
That's pretty good.
Against the spread.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she was 2-2 this past week.
Hmm. Well, guys, big game this week, obviously, down in Baton Rouge. One thing I don't know if you pointed out is that the Dan Mullen coaching staff has actually won 2 in a row against Orgeron and the staff down in Baton Rouge. I was wondering how you guys would compare the two staffs. Obviously, we got Brady in Baton Rouge now, which has been great. I really think this is a chance for Orgeron to kind of run it up on them. And how would you rate the two staffs and maybe – you know, compare them to the rest of the conference. Okay. Appreciate it.
All right, sure. Let's do that first. Let's go offensive staffs where you have the addition of Brady. But it's
I don't even consider Ensminger part of the staff.
Oh. He's the offensive coordinator. But
he calls the play.
Well, that's what they say. Yeah. But we saw Ensminger over the last couple of years call the plays, and now that Joe Brady is part of that staff,
this is going to be an overstatement. This is going to be an overstatement. I'll bring Rockstar in, okay? So I'm going to say in front, this is an overstatement. But Rockstar, if I went and made you DJ of a party, right? And
I'm listening.
And I gave you,
I like it.
I gave you, say, the Rolling Stone magazine top 100 songs of all time, and I say pick from these songs. You would sound like a great DJ, right?
Of course.
All right. So that's what Joe Brady is doing for Steve Ensminger. Now, I said it was an overstatement.
I'm going to skip your party, by the way. Yeah,
he would sound like
you're my girl?
He would sound like the worst DJ of all time.
No, you get my okay.
I get the analogy.
You're taking it way too literally here, that way. My point is, Joe Brady has given Steve Ensminger, hey, here's great plays to call.
The
call some of them.
The best coach, including Dan Mullen and Ed Orgeron, to me is still Dave Aranda on both staffs.
Aranda's
that good.
I would agree with you, but Todd Grantham's defense,
it's been lights out this year. I'll give Grantham a lot of credit, but Grantham's
number 10
in
the country right now.
Has been a little inconsistent. Will you give me that?
Yes, I think consistently I would go more Dave Aranda, but right now Grantham's defense is playing better.
He's consistently more inconsistent.
Oh, if you had this Florida defense with this LSU offense, watch out.
We
Alabama.
Say that, and I agree with you, Lance. We say that. LSU's defense is 17th in the country, total defense. I mean, it's not as bad, I think, as we might.
Yeah, but, and Cole brought this up yesterday. Grant Delpit going into the season might have been at least the best overall talent in the SEC. You know, he hasn't played up to his potential, and I just think overall, I think it's been a little, underwhelming.
You know how many yards? Defense. You know how many yards per game more LSU is giving up than Florida? 9.
But give me this: do you think it's possible that we're sleeping on LSU's defense because the offense is so good? And I think this is what's going on with Alabama right now. Alabama's still got a really good defense, but the offense is so good, it puts the defense in more trickier situations.
Yeah, there was never a time. With the way Alabama used to play football, that their defense would have been on the field for 88 plays.
If LSU was scoring 24 right. points a game, I think the defense would look a lot better. Does that make sense?
Unless you were playing really good Gus Malzahn back in the day, and I don't know how much in 2013, how many plays they ran against Alabama in what ended up being the kick six game, but that was a back-and-forth game. I don't know how many plays they ran that day, but it's hard to imagine you running 88 plays on Alabama unless Alabama's scoring a lot of points, you know? Just not the way they used to play football. So those offenses do put your defensive numbers in peril sometimes.
Well, we're basing a lot of what LSU has done on one game, aren't we?
Yeah, the Texas game.
Where do you think there are 130 college teams. Where do you think Texas ranks pass defense? By the way, this is a big storyline this weekend, too.
I think it's like 118.
It's like 99.
It's like 126.
Yeah.
Out of 130. So
again, I was a little higher on Texas going into the season. I said they would be 10-2. They're more like a 9-3 team to me. That Texas win is not that impressive to me. But with that said, I think LSU wins this week.
Yeah. Here's the deal. Grantham's going to what is it, Brown? Exotic blitzes.
Yes, he gives you some exotic looks.
He's going to throw a lot of exotics at LSU, and that's why I think you get some inconsistent play from Florida's defense. I think they take a lot of chances, and they'll take chances this weekend, and that's going to let the band play.
Yeah. Again, you guys know I'm a contrarian. The number's too big, so if it doesn't make sense, it makes sense. I mean, this number to be 13.5.
Uncle Vinny.
I mean, that's a crazy number. I mean, do you guys not agree on a neutral?
Seems high.
Neutral site right now, I would list LSU as like a 5-point favorite. And for this thing to be 13.5 is insane.
Yeah. For a team that just beat what was at the time the number 7 team in the country to be down that much going to Baton Rouge. Vic in Birmingham is next with us. Hey, Vic, how are you?
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Great, Vic. Thank you.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions. About the USC and Notre Dame game this weekend.
You got
it, man. The thing is, I know we had the weather update that came on at the beginning of the show. I'm going to that game. We're leaving out on tomorrow, driving up and all.
Yeah, I thought about going to it myself, man. Have you ever been to South Bend before?
No, sir. And that's what I'm gonna ask y'all. What's to be expected when I get to Notre Dame, South Bend, also?
It's neat. You'll respect the history. I wasn't blown away with the facility, and I think we're just spoiled being SEC fans and going to different venues around here. The tailgating's not as good. But once you get in the stadium, I mean, it's a good buzz. It's a good atmosphere, and that should be a tremendous game Saturday night.
And also, I have a friend's son that plays for USC. That's the reason why we're going. They're coming out of Mobile, coming to pick me up en route on Thursday morning. And also, I was going to ask you, Lance.
Is that Vilas?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Velus Jones, he is a legit talent, one of the best return guys in college football.
That's right. And the thing is, I was going to ask, I know Lance, you came through with your lock on last night. I was going to ask you, did you have an early opinion on that game? Because, you know, when you're at the game, it doesn't like have some action on the game.
Yes, get down on SC. I mean, last year they played them within a possession. I thought Notre Dame was a better team in 2018 than they are this year. And actually, USC is better this year than they were last year. I think up front, USC is getting better. They're getting more athletes. That offensive line has played extremely well. And if USC is not turning the football over, with Slovis back in the lineup, Fink's coming off a 3-interception bad performance against Washington, I think this one goes to the wire. I'm not going to be surprised at all if USC wins this game straight up. So take USC plus the points.
And also, one more thing, then I go. I know here in Birmingham, it's 84 degrees, and I checked the weather going to – South Bend is going to be in the probably low 40s. Do you think that might be have an effect on the boys coming from sunny California traveling to the Midwest?
Very good question, Vic. Is USC worse in cold weather, Lance?
When they play in the Pacific Northwest, I mean, they play games in Corvallis and they play games in Pullman. It gets a little chilly up there. No, I don't think this would be a big factor.
You don't think so?
No.
Did one of your receivers, I just saw this headline, didn't stop to read the story, which I guess I should have now. I think one of your receivers said he's looking forward to running up the score.
That would probably be Tyler Vaughn.
No, I found it now. I thought I wasn't going to find it. Michael Pittman.
Okay.
Quote, I told them to embrace the suck, Pittman said via the Los Angeles Times. It's going to be cold, but it'll be fun when we're running up the score.
Okay. I wish Pittman wouldn't have done that. And by the way, I brought this up weeks ago. Second most improved player in college football behind Joe Burrow is Michael Pittman Jr.
By the way, Vic spot on in his forecast. High in South Bend for the tailgate's 51,
ooh,
but it's going to be high 40s for kickoff.
You know, I was watching – it's so hot down here, but I was watching Michigan-Iowa. Well, first of all, in the establishing shot, Gus Johnson was bundled like he was in Green Bay in January, but everybody was all bundled up. I was like, God, how cold is it up there already?
I told you guys, I'm going to Big Ten Country. I was supposed to go to Minnesota, Nebraska this week. The time got moved to 6:30 because of USC Notre Dame. I'm not going to go to that game now, but it's going to be snowing where I am this weekend.
Yeah, snow shower Saturday during the game. High temperature on Saturday where you're going is 39.
Yeah,
so that's Minnesota, Notre Dame, right?
Yeah,
Minnesota, Nebraska.
Minnesota, Nebraska, 50% chance of the snow showers.
Yeah, can't wait for that.
Yeah. Were you considering driving from Minneapolis to South Bend? Is that what you were saying?
No. I this is one of those getaway weekends, and I was going to go to Chicago for the weekend instead of Minneapolis. Okay.
All right, Melvin in Birmingham. But listen, if you want to play for tickets to see Miranda Lambert in concert in January, you can buy them Friday. We've got two pair of tickets we're going to give away in our next segment. Brown's got a fun game to play, so you can call now. 834-9450, 834-9450, 800-239-WJOX, and jump in with us to play our fun game in our next segment. But Melvin wants to talk a little Auburn football. What's up, Melvin?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Melvin.
Yeah, I get so frustrated with Auburn fans. And, you know, generally I don't call and being on the radio. I try to give a valid point and ask you guys, you know, some questions about the team and so forth. But it amazes me that, you know, Auburn fans call in and, you know, they call for Gus's head and all of that, and they don't know who they want, which is crazy to me, first of all. And then it's like, you know, they go on and on about what he doesn't do, what he don't do. But my message to Auburn fans, if you think you got it bad, just look up the road to Tennessee. Not knowing what coach you don't want, and just getting rid of coach, please look to Tennessee and other programs if you think you got it so bad. Right. And that was just my point.
Thank you, Melvin. I know who I would want. I know who I would want, and I missed on Justin Fuente. I'm not going to miss on this guy.
Okay, save that after we talk to Stan.
All right.
I want to hear who Brown wants to be the next coach.
Whoa. If you hire – I'm not saying to fire Malzahn and hire this guy. I'm just saying to people who say that, if you did make a move, I know who you should hire.
Okay. Well, back off. Don't hang on later on. Brown is not going to tell us.
I'll tell you. I'm just saying. I want it to be clear. I'm not saying Gus Malzahn should be fired.
So Alan Green calls you, right?
Huh?
Alan Green calls
you? Yeah, if Alan Green called and said, hey, I just fired Gus Malzahn, who should I hire?
Follow the show on Instagram @JocksRoundtable.